Thank you, Paul. You know, as we were singing Go Tell It on the Mountain, Ashley was kind of hamming it up with boom, boom, boom. You know, it's kind of fun, and we were all laughing. And I was laughing too, but I had a tear or two in my eye, to be honest. I just remembered, you know, when you know Christ, when you have more than mere religion, you know, Christmas can be really fun if all you have is religion, and that's okay. But once you know Christ, it is just night and day. And I recall, of course, my story, I was brought up in a religious family, and that song reminds me of the blue and gold dinner for Cub Scouts. So in 1965, when I was 10 years old, the entertainment was my den mother's oldest son played Go Tell It on the Mountain on the piano. Now, I don't know that I'd ever heard that song before, but just that idea that there's a message that's worth telling other people about. This joyful, hey, go, because for me, at least the religious home in which I was brought up, religion was something you just kind of tough it out, if you know what I'm saying. You just endure, and you have to go to church so many times and kind of jump through these different hoops, and it was just try to tough it out, and hopefully you'll get to heaven someday. And so the idea that I've got some good news to go and proclaim somewhere, just, wow, that was, it helped me understand that I was missing something. Now, it didn't really come to fruition for about another 8 years, 9 years, but God was at work in me even as a little kid through a Christmas carol. So anyway, I know Ashley really wants it to be December 24th today, but sorry to say it's December 17th, and he's just dying to give his message, and I'm dying to hear it, really, but you'll have to wait one more week, because this morning we are wrapping up a four-part series on our core values. Before we get into that, though, what the challenge for us who carry the responsibility of teaching the church here, we have certain things that we feel God is leading us to teach through, and we want to keep moving forward, but sometimes what happens in the process is we blast ahead and maybe forget what we have been learning. And what I want to do is just take an opportunity to invite Chris. Why don't you come up, Chris? I don't know how long ago it was, weeks ago, we had a series on stewardship, and I just want us to be able to circle back and just hear from someone that had an opportunity to see God come through. So why don't you go ahead and share? Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Kind of just want to share about how God reminds us of what he, has done for us and his love. Probably about 3 weeks ago, I know I've been struggling with tithing, and I haven't been given money. I was looking through my life of, you know, bills, everything like that, and I concentrated on saying, well, you know what, if I give some money, I'm not going to be able to pay my bills, and that wasn't correct. And so what happened was probably about 3 weeks ago, I had a little bit of money in my wallet. I gave whatever was in my wallet to church. And the following week, I gave whatever's in my wallet to the church. Now, was it 10% of my earnings? No. But the following week, I had a check come back in the mail from my endodontist that worked on my tooth for the exact amount of money that I gave to the church plus 10%, exactly. And it's a reminder, you know. It's the little things like that.
So
it's
God just, is tithing to you.
But it's a reminder, hey, you know, it's those perfect gifts, you know. It's he had to remind me. Now, am I saying that you give money, you're going to get that money back? No. But what I'm saying is when God reminds you, you know, answer back. It's really good because he did for me, and it just was a big shock. So, yeah, thank you for your time, Jack.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thank you. Strengthening Your Core is the title of the series, and so today is part 4, and as you know, if you've been coming the first 3, this is more than just passing information on to you. This is placing before you what we feel are really things that are important to God, and as such, we as a body, we embrace these things, and so we just want everybody to know what are the things that we really, in particular, really value. This is not about our statement of faith. There are certain things that every genuine Christian believes, that Jesus is the Son of God, that he was born of a virgin, that he suffered and died for our sins, that he was raised, he's in heaven, he's coming back. The Bible is the Word of God. There are certain a certain statement of faith that we have as a church, but that's not what this is about. This is about the particular things that we really own as values that really motivate us and help us, help inform what we do. And what we're going to be doing here in a month or so is we're going to be asking you to respond and say, if you feel so led, no compulsion, and if you don't, if you decide not to do this, the doors are still open and you're still welcome to come here and on Sunday morning for as long as you'd like. But we're going to invite you to sort of plant your flag and say, I want to declare that I'm a part of this body, that I want to be a member. So we're going to give you an opportunity to make a sort of a membership covenant. But anyway, we didn't want you to go into that blind without understanding what we stand for and what we're all about. Without getting into the details of what I've gone through the last 3 weeks, I do want to just at least mention that it just so happens that NSCCCORE just happened to be the first letters in the 8 core values that are our church's values. And so we started off with nations reached with the gospel. We believe that this is something that has been on God's heart from the time Adam and Eve fell in the garden and were in need of redemption. Mankind has been in need of redemption. Indeed, our generation is in need of redemption the world over. And this is something important to God, and we're to own that and take part of that. Saving and sanctifying grace. Without the grace of God, you and I would be completely sunk. Completely sunk. You didn't need just a little bit of grace to get you over the hump. Okay, God, I got most of this. Thanks for a little boost at the very end. Get into heaven. No. Oh, no. Whether you may think that's the case, but the reality is that you and I needed a ton of grace in order to come into God's family. C stands for commitment to God and His Word. The next C, there are 3 C's. The next C stands for church. We believe in the veracity, the importance of the church as the expression of Christ on this earth. Where is Jesus right now? Well, people say, oh, he's in my heart. No. Actually, blood vessels are in your heart. I know what you mean when you say Christ is in my heart, but Christ is in heaven. There's a man in heaven. He shed his blood, flesh and bones. He's in heaven. He's coming back. He's preparing a place for you and me. When he was on earth, he said, I'm the light of the world. But there was a point in his ministry when he turned to his disciples and looked at them. And I don't know if he pointed. The scriptures doesn't say he pointed, but maybe he did. And said, now you are the light of the world. You and I are the representation of Christ himself on this earth. How are we doing with that? That's another issue. We'll maybe talk about that later. But that's, church is so important. Church leadership. It's really important to understand that there's a big difference between the world's idea of what leadership is and what leadership is in the kingdom. It's really sort of an upside down thing. Jesus said to his disciples, the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. You're going to do what I say because I'm the boss. I'm in charge here. Well, that's in the world. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I guess we need that in the military, for example. We need to understand clearly authority and you'll do it because I say. But Jesus turned to his disciples and said, it shall not be so among you. These were the men to whom he was going to pass the reins of leading the first century church. He said, look, we do it a different way in my Father's kingdom. If you want to be the greatest, you'll be the servant of all. Servant leadership. O stands for oneness. In other words, love and unity. We esteem those things very, very, very highly. It's not just, well, if we agree on all the points of doctrine, then I guess we can get along. No, look, at some point we're going to have different opinions on certain doctrine, but there's something that trumps that, and that is simply the love that we have for one another and the unity that we have in Jesus Christ, without which this world doesn't give us a second look. How many Christians or how many non-Christians do you know that disparage Christianity because what they see in among Christians? Christians not getting along, blah, blah, blah. Wow, we have an opportunity to represent Christ to the world because of our love and our unity together. So today is the first of our last two. R stands for raising godly families. Raising godly families. And that's what I want to talk with you about this morning. Maybe this is your idea of a godly family. I don't know. Some of you don't know who that is because you're too young. In the 70s, there was a show called The Waltons. And so they were portrayed as this wholesome, you know, clean-cut family. So maybe that's your idea of a godly family. Or maybe it's this. I don't know. I'm not saying that's my idea. I don't know. When you see that phrase, raising godly family, what comes into your mind? Sometimes, probably, there's maybe a stereotypical family that is maybe dresses a certain way, or I don't know. What constitutes, maybe that's what I'm asking, what constitutes a godly family? So we want to talk about this here sometime this morning. Let's break this down and let's define our terms first. So what do we mean by families? What is the significance of family to God? In Genesis, God told Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. God's intention, God's heart is to bless all, did you hear me say all? All, isn't that what it says? All the families. Someone once said all means all. That's all means. It means all. That includes your family. You say, Jack, my family's fractured. It's broken. It's dysfunctional. Welcome to the club. We're all on one level, we're all broken. We're all dysfunctional. We all have issues. Nevertheless, God's heart is to bless your family through Jesus Christ. God was talking to Abraham, but was inferring that the blessing would come through Abraham's descendant, namely Jesus Christ himself. When God brought the woman to the man in the garden, brought Eve to Adam, he said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So this idea is originally God's idea, that a young person would grow up, leave his parents, have a spouse, and establish their own family. This is not any government's idea. This is God's idea. Well, what about the person whose family is completely fractured? Maybe they're all alone and they don't really have a family. Psalm 68, a father of the fatherless and a judge for the widows is God in his holy habitation. God makes a home for the lonely. So in one sense, it doesn't really matter what your demographics are. there's a place for you in God's family, and there's a place for you in his family, the church. And so we want to talk about the value that God places on families. Now, when you think about the Ten Commandments, and of course, the Ten Commandments, the first four, they govern our relationship to God. So the first one, have no gods before him. Second one, don't bow down to idols, right? The third one, don't take his name in vain. And the fourth, keep the Sabbath holy. Again, the first four govern a person's relationship to God. The last six have to do with our relationship with other human beings. And they are, honor your parents, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie, and don't covet. It's just interesting that though these first four govern, as I said, our relationship to God, the last six, our relationship with other people, the first two of those six specifically refer to your immediate family. How you treat your parents, especially as they age. Now, that's a verse that we taught our children when they were very young. Honor your father and your mother. See, some of you are laughing nervously because you think, well, Jack, you're just doing that because you just, it's a control thing. You know, actually, it's a very loving thing for you to teach your son and to teach your daughter to honor his parents. It's not just about that you want to be in control. See, parents today, generally, as I see it, are really uncomfortable with authority because they generally have a hard time understanding that it's something good and it's something from God. A loving thing for you parents, and especially new parents, is to teach your children to honor you and your spouse. So honor your parents and don't break your marriage vows. Don't have sex with anyone other than the person to whom you're married. Then in between those two, it's, by the way, don't kill either. I mean, so these are some pretty important commandments governing, as I say, two of those first three govern our relationships with those in our immediate family. Let's talk about the word raising. What do we mean by raising godly families? Isn't that, how come that's something in the local church? Isn't that just for moms and dads? That's parents' responsibility. One of our political leaders some years ago said, it takes a village, if you remember that. I think that was Hillary Clinton, actually, that said that. And you know, there's an element of truth in what she said. Now, maybe, I don't know, some people would take that to the extreme and want the government to take over raising kids, and we certainly don't want that. But by the same token, mom and dad, you aren't the whole package. You need help and encouragement and support from others who can come around you, others who've trod this path before you that sort of can mentor you and encourage you and can help you in your parenting. I know I've mentioned this before. When we lived in Poland, we experienced something that Joan and I felt was really pretty cool. In that culture, very quickly, little children learn to call friends of their parents auntie and uncle. And so this church that we were involved in for a while, these little kids would call me Wujek Jacek. Jacek was my Polish name. And so Joan was Chocha Joan. And it was auntie and uncle. And it was just kind of this neat feeling that I'm not their parent. But very early on, I didn't hardly know some of these little kids, and they would come up to me and say, uncle, would you do this for me, or would you help me with that? And what we want to engender here is that atmosphere that even though these little kids run around, hey, they're not my kids. I don't, you know, kids swinging from the chandelier, but it's not my kid. I'm not going to do anything about it. No, wait a minute. This kid could hurt himself. You need to step in and say, listen, Johnny, maybe that's not a good idea to swing from the chandelier. When we have baby dedications, we not only pray for the parents, but we invite the congregation to sort of go on record before God as saying, we understand we play a role. We play a role in the life of this child. Again, how many children or young people do you know of who've walked away from their faith because of the negative things that they saw happening in their local church? We could probably make a long, long list. And so don't be that person. Don't let any young person be able to look back and say, well, yeah, my mom and dad tried to teach me such and such, but boy, I sure didn't see it in my local church. Let's understand that we all have a role to play as a church in the development of families. What do we mean by godly, raising godly families? Well, the internet dictionary that I checked used these synonyms: pious, devout. You know, you are devoted to something or some things. Your family is devoted to something. I wonder if someone were to ask, oh, your neighbors or someone who kind of can see your family and watch you, what would they say you're devoted to? Not what you say you're devoted to, but by virtue of how you're actually living your lives, what would other people say that you're devoted to? So pious, devout, believing. We all want our kids to grow up and for them to believe. The time's going to come when little Johnny, little Susie realizes, wow, I can decide whether or not I'm going to embrace these things that my mom and dad believe. And the sad truth is that the record of evangelical Christians these days is horrible. It is horrible in terms of the percentage of young people who are growing up and thumbing their nose at their parents' faith. And we want to do all we can to help you parents to affect your children in such a way that they own. You know you're not going to force your kids to believe anything. They're only going to believe it because they genuinely make a decision to buy into it. So we want to do all we can to help you with that. So I added this. Godly could be described as just being in line with what God wants for your family. Okay? Namely, what? What does God want for your family anyway? What does he have in mind for you? What's his desire for you? And again, this is nothing particularly inspired. These are my words. For each member to be a fulfilled, joyful, giving, others-oriented, generous, happy person who loves God and the things of God, who has adopted God's values and as his or her own. Now you might say, well, that sounds really, you know, idealistic. But this is, I believe, what God wants for your life, and I believe he wants it for every member of your family. For the family unit to function harmoniously relative to their various roles. I understand that when we start talking about men and women and families and we start talking about roles, this can get inflammatory really quickly. I understand that. Nevertheless, we believe that God has given specific roles within the family into men and women. And again, I realize this, I'm kind of venturing out into what could be kind of dangerous waters here. I don't want to necessarily spend our entire time on this, but think back to the book of Genesis and in the garden where God created Adam, and then he brought all the animals to Adam, and Adam named them all, and still there was not found a helper suitable to him. And finally, God caused Adam to fall asleep, took a rib from Adam's side, and formed woman out of man and brought her to the man. And so She was the complement to him. And what our society wants to say today is that men and women are essentially the same. Okay, maybe they're certain, you know, plumbing or whatever is different, but they're basically the same. And we want to say that God has ascribed certain roles to husband and to wife, in no way suggesting that one is more important, one is better than the other. As a matter of fact, we know that some have construed the biblical model to suggest that men are to sort of keep their thumb on women or keep them down. And there's a very sober warning in the New Testament to men that if in any way you husbands construe this to be that somehow your wife is less of an heir of Christ than you are, your prayers, God is just going to not even hear your prayers. You need to understand that the idea of you being a spiritual leader in your home does not mean you're better than or closer to God or more important than. As a matter of fact, you are to love her as Christ loved the church. You are to lay down your life for her. That's your role. And her role is to reflect the church's relationship to Christ in her following of his leadership. Anyway, yeah, different roles. And for parents, their role is to raise their children, fathers in particular. Raise your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. We're instructed in the New Testament, in the book of Ephesians. And for fathers to not exasperate your children. Boy, is that easy to do. Because we want them to do certain things. Truth be told, sometimes our motive is like, ooh, how's this going to look? You know, if other people see my son or daughter behaving this way, I want them to change. Sometimes it's because how it's going to reflect on me, and that's really not the best motive. But so sometimes we can kind of use coercion to get them to do the right thing when what God wants us to do is to win their hearts. Give me your heart, my son. Solomon wrote in Proverbs, reflecting God's heart toward us and what a dad's heart ought to be toward his child. Give me your heart, my son. I can remember sometimes in our parent, I mean, we're still parents, but we're going to have a teenager for about 3 more weeks. We have no more teenagers. It's amazing. Hard to believe. But there were times in our parenting where Joan came to me and said, Jack, you don't realize it. You are exasperating this certain kid. The way you're acting, the way you say certain things. And that was so helpful because she was tuned into that and she helped me to stop exasperating. I'll tell you what I did. I'm a morning person. Well, actually, I didn't need her to tell me this, but this is something that I did. I'm a morning person, and so we had this certain routine and schedule. Okay, the alarm goes off, and I get up, and I spend time alone with God, and I'm reading my Bible, and that's time for the kids to get up. And I can tend to be sort of a Tigger in the morning. Hey, it's a new day, do-do-do, you know. Some of you are moaning, I know. Yeah. So, true confessions, I was kind of dancing up and down the hallway, doing drum solos on the wall. It's time to get up. It's a new day. And teenage boys don't really do well with that. And one morning, my son Luke came out in the hallway and said, Dad, would you please never do that again? I knew I was exasperating him. But there were other things, seriously, where I was exasperating them, and it was so helpful for Joan to help me see that. But parents, you have a role with your children, and it is to win their hearts. Now, that doesn't mean that, well, whatever Johnny and Susie want, my goodness, of course, that's what we're going to do. No, you're the parent. This is my little pet peeve. I have the microphone, so I get to say what my pet peeve is. Parents today, so very often, well, Johnny, do you want to go to bed now, or do you want to keep playing with your truck? Oh, you want to? Okay, we'll keep playing with your toy. Do you want to do this now, or do you want to do this? Do you want to do this, or do you want to? You're the parent. You own your authority and use it lovingly to say, Johnny, you can play with your truck for 5 more minutes, then it's bedtime. So I tried to, didn't always hit it, but I tried to have that balance of loving authority but being sensitive to what my kids' needs were. And I'll just tell a quick story. Have time for this. This could probably seem to some people like a decision I made was not in the best interest of my kids and really was kind of pushing them. When we moved to Poland in 2002, this particular son who got aggravated by my drum solos, he was a senior in high school. He attended the 6th largest high school in the state of Missouri, so it was not a small school. He was on the football team. He was on the wrestling team. He was a good-looking kid. He was popular. He had a lot going for him. His junior year, he was the MVP of the JV wrestling team. He was the defensive player of the year for the football team. So he was going into his senior year stoked. He was going to have a big senior year. But Dad says, we're moving to Poland. Yeah. And as it turned out, I thought that I would have our support raised before the school year started, but as it turned out, we weren't able to leave until March. So he was able to play football his senior year, but he was not able to wrestle. And he said that the day when we sat in the airport getting ready to get on the plane to move to Poland to be missionaries, he said, I thought that was the worst day of my life. But I knew he was going through some difficult things. But I also knew God was leading me. And I also believed that in the end, this would be the most loving and best thing for him. And that's what we did. And today, he would say that moving to Poland was a fantastic experience for him. So sometimes, parents, you need to do what you know is best. Even though Johnny or Susie doesn't maybe agree, you're the parent. And so it's incumbent upon you to seek God and understand his will and to use your authority lovingly. This is kind of weird. I started subscribing to Time magazine. One of my granddaughters goes to school and they were selling magazine subscriptions. Okay, I'll get Time magazine. So the first issue came and it was this Person of the Year issue. Probably you are aware that the news has just been saturated with stories of sexual impropriety, sexual assault, and from Hollywood to Washington, D.C., to state houses all over the United States, to corporate boardrooms, people's lives, people are being found out for their sexual indiscretions. And I just wanted to take opportunity, since this is so pertinent in this day and time, to really address just the area of our sexuality. It is a gift from God, and it's really important that we steward that really well, because there are many people who have not handled that well, and now their life is in ruins. Now, you might say, well, good for them because they ruined other people's lives. But I just want to encourage you by the way, let me just also put this qualifier out there. This is one headline that I saw. Sexual harassment charges being used against innocent people to settle scores and gain power. So don't believe every accusation that comes down the pike, okay? We need to understand that. But nonetheless, very serious accusations are coming and people's lives are being ruined. And I say, number one, there but for the grace of God go I. I don't know how you think about your own life, but I, in all honesty, I think, you know what? I'm not going to throw any stones at someone who's addicted to gambling. I could have. I'm not addicted to gambling, okay? I could have been. I'm telling you, I could have been. I had a paper route when I was a kid, and I made some dollars, and every year our Catholic parish had a festival, and we had games of chance. And I remember putting down these dollars and, you know, winning this money and this rush of adrenaline. If you've ever gambled, you know what that is. It's a chemical rush of adrenaline. And so I realized at some point, okay, this is not a good thing. This is very dangerous. And I was able to get away from it. But people get sucked into certain addictions. And let's be careful not to throw stones, okay? There, but for the grace of God, I could have become addicted to gambling. I could have become addicted to alcohol. I was carousing High Street when I was at Ohio State, like a lot of kids do. I was getting into drinking. Not tons, but I did my share. I'm not proud of it. But I could have become an alcoholic. I could have become a drug addict. I was starting to smoke weed and kind of go down this track. My best friend started dropping acid, and God saved me out of that. So I am not going to say, wow, that what a horrible guy, what a horrible... Okay, it is horrible. I'm not trying to say it's not bad. It is horrific when someone violates another person in that way. That is horrible. There but for the grace of God go I. And there is forgiveness and there is redemption for anyone caught in those sins. But I also want to underscore this point. Be sure your sin will find you out. It's a verse from the Old Testament. So I just want to plead with you. If in any area, whether it's sexuality or maybe some other area, if there's some area where sin has just got a hold of you, I just beg of you to just look. We're forgiven. Someone talked about a t-shirt that said, I'm a Christian. I have nothing to prove, nothing to hide, and nothing to lose. So in one sense, that's really true for every Christian. I don't have anything to hide. I shine the spotlight. Yeah, there's stuff in my life. I'll admit any sin because I want to get help and I want to get victory. So if you are ensnared in any kind of sinful activity, please tell someone, whether it's Ashley or me, or maybe if you're a woman, maybe it would be another woman, someone in your small group, because there is help for you. The devil means business. Wow, this is a big topic. I knew this would happen. Anyway, Genesis 1 says that maleness and femaleness is from God. What marks us in our humanness, there at the very end, God created man in his image. The Hebrew word is Adam. God created Adam, man in his image, in the image of God created him. Male and female, he created them. Isn't that interesting that at the very beginning when we are identified by God, he didn't say he made them at the beginning. Some people who like Mexican food and some people who like Chinese. What? Some people who are Tiggers and some people who are Eeyores. How did he delineate? By gender. So what you are in your gender is from God, and it is a great and fantastic thing. You've probably heard the phrase, money is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master, and that is true. I would substitute and say your sexuality is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. And people who are enslaved end up in ruin. Your sexuality is a gift from God, and it is very powerful. Think nuclear power, okay? When you think nuclear power, what do you think of? Well, some people think of the bomb off over Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But other people might think of illuminating and giving light to an entire city. So which do you want to use the power for? God made your sexuality so that you would bond with one person in an exclusive way. Even scientists say chemically this is true. There is a chemical, and I don't understand the chemistry of it, but trust me, it's there. Someone else can explain it. But when you have a sexual experience, there's some chemistry happens there and you bond. And if you're bonding to images on the internet or someone to whom you're not married, that is so destructive, and God so does not want that to happen. Your sexuality is to help fuel and to help cement something very great, very important, namely your relationship with your spouse. You think, okay, so relationship with my spouse, what's the big deal? Well, for a Christian, that is the picture of Christ's relationship with his church. The way husbands relate to their wives, the way wives relate to their husbands. This is a big deal in the kingdom. This is huge. Is that an important relationship? It sure is. And now I'm almost out of time, and I have one more core value to cover, and that is E, which stands for every member, a minister. Every member, a minister. I was raised in a tradition that embraced the idea of a priesthood. That is to say, a separate, distinct class of people that were, by virtue of their calling or whatever, they were closer to God, and they were an intermediary between the people and God. And Peter says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You are a royal priesthood. We are all priests to God. Okay? He came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. For through him we both have our access in one spirit to the Father. Through him we both. We all have access to the Father through the Spirit. I always get a little nervous when someone comes up to me and says, Pastor, will you pray for me? Yeah, but don't think I somehow have a special inside track to God that you don't have. If you're a genuine believer, if you know Christ, if you've been reborn, tell you what happened. This is exactly what happened. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice. He's hanging on the cross. Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Some of those who were standing there when they heard it began saying, this man's calling for Elijah. Immediately one of them ran and taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine, put it on a reed and gave him a drink. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. Instantaneously, the moment he yielded up his spirit, what happened? And behold, it's kind of a Bible word. Matthew is saying behold because he's saying, hey guys, pay attention to this. Don't let this get by you. Check this out. Behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. God did it. It went from top. And what previously had excluded the nation of Israel and allowed only this special class of priests, these Levites, now was torn because his blood was shed, the price was paid. You now have full access to God. You're a priest, and he wants you to use that priesthood to go out and proclaim his excellencies. Go tell it on the mountain. Oh, I thought that's why we pay Jack and Ashley. They're the ones that proclaim. No, we're all part of this together. We're all priests. So there's a lot more that could be said about every member and minister. We just want you to embrace the fact that you can minister with great effect in God's kingdom. I have a video that, if you ask me, I'll show you. It's on my phone, of my daughter Lynn a few weeks ago baptizing a Muslim background believer over at Awakened Church. What? She's a girl? If you're a believer, you can baptize another believer. I thought it had to be the pastor. No. Jesus said to his disciples, go and make disciples, baptizing them. Paul Marshall is going to come up here in just a minute and lead us in communion. Paul's not an ordained anything, but he's a priest. He can minister. He can serve. Paul, why don't you come on up here, as a matter of fact. He can serve, and he's going to help us experience communion here. So well, maybe at this point, Paul, I'll just go ahead and pass it off to you.
Okay.
And
do you still want communion to be last?
Yeah, no, go ahead and do the announcements now, and we'll do communion.
Okay.